David again gathered all the chosen men of Israel, 30,000. David and all the people with him set out and went to Baal of Judah to bring up from there the Ark of God, which is called by the name of the Lord of hosts, who is enthroned on the cherubim. They carried the Ark of God on a new cart and brought it out of the house of Abinadab, who was on the hill. Uzzah and Ahio, the sons of Abinadab, were driving the new cart with the Ark of God, and Ahio went in front of the Ark. David and all the house of Israel were dancing before the Lord with all their might, with songs and lyres and harps and tambourines and castanets and cymbals. When they were coming to the threshing floor of Nacon, Uzzah reached out his hand to the Ark of God and took hold of it, for the oxen shook it. The anger of the Lord was kindled against Uzzah, and God struck him there because he reached out his hand to the Ark, and he died there beside the Ark of God. David was angry because the Lord had burst forth with an outburst against Uzzah. So that place is called Perez Uzzah, or bursting out against Uzzah, to this day. And David was afraid of the Lord that day. He said, "How can the Ark of the Lord come into my care?" So David was unwilling to take the Ark of the Lord into his care in the city of David. Instead, David took it to the house of Obed-Edom the Gittite. The Ark of the Lord remained in the house of Obed-Edom the Gittite 3 months. And the Lord blessed Obed-Edom and his household. So it was told King David, "The Lord has blessed the household of Obed-Edom and all that belongs to him because of the Ark of God." So David went and brought up the Ark of God from the house of Obed-Edom to the city of David with rejoicing. And when those who bore the Ark of the Lord had gone 6 paces, he sanctified an ox and a fatling. David danced before the Lord with all his might. David was girded with a linen ephod. And so David and all the house of Israel brought up the Ark of the Lord with shouting and with the sound of the trumpet. As the Ark of the Lord came into the city of David, Michal, daughter of Saul, looked out of the window and saw King David leaping and dancing before the Lord, and she despised him in her heart. They brought in the Ark of the Lord and set it in its place inside the tent David had pitched for it. And David offered burnt offerings and offerings of well-being before the Lord. When David had finished offering the burnt offerings and the offerings of well-being, he blessed the people in the name of the Lord of hosts. It distributed food among all the people, the whole multitude of Israel, both women and men, to each a cake of bread, a portion of meat, a cake of raisins. Then all the people went back to their homes. David returned to bless his household. But Michal, the daughter of Saul, came out to meet David and said, "How the king of Israel honored himself today, uncovering himself today before the eyes of his servants' maids, as any vulgar fellow might shamelessly uncover himself." David said to Michal, "It was before the Lord who chose me in place of your father and all his household to appoint me as prince over Israel, the people of the Lord. It was before the Lord that I have danced before the Lord. I will make myself yet more contemptible than this, and I will be abased in my own eyes, but the maids of whom you have spoken by them, I shall be held in honor." And Michal, the daughter of Saul, had no child to the day of her death. This is the word of the Lord. Regardless of his wife's reaction, and in spite of any other bumps in the road, this was the biggest day of David's life. Now, he's had a lot of big days before. The day that the prophet Samuel knocked on his father's door, That was a big day. Samuel was looking for a new king. God had gotten disgusted with old King Saul and told the prophet, "Go to Jesse's house because one of his sons is my next selection." Jesse opened the door to the strange old prophet, who then went down the line between all the boys and sized them all up. Samuel said, "Is this all you have?" Jesse said, "Well, there's one more, little David. He's out in the field tending the sheep." Sure enough, God said, "He's the one." So Samuel made him kneel, anointed him right there in the living room, surrounded by his brothers. He wasn't quite the king yet, but it was a big day. His victory over Goliath, that was a big day too. Little David was sent by his father to deliver his brothers' lunch boxes on the battlefield and discovered everybody in the army was standing around and moping. Just then, this big Philistine steps out to insult the Israelites for the 40th day in a row. He was enormous, built like a tank, ugly like a tank, heavily armored like a tank, and he had to be 10 feet tall. David shrugged, went down to the riverbank, picked up 5 smooth stones, put one of them in a sling, ran toward the giant, whirled a contraption around his head, and planted the first stone right here, bullseye. Goliath dropped to the ground. That was a big day. He had had a lot of big days. The day crazy King Saul threw a spear at him and he ducked just in time, that got the adrenaline going. Sneaking out of his own house just ahead of Saul's assassins, that kept the adrenaline going. Staying 3 steps ahead of jealous King Saul, leading his own band of marauders against the Philistines and winning, avoiding angry King Saul's slaughter of the Jedi masters in the temple, outliving the heretic King Saul and his final son's attempt on the throne. I guess you could say every day for King David was a big day. But the story we just heard tells about the really big day. And that was the day they brought the Ark of the Covenant into the city of David. He's the king now, so he can name a city after himself. We call it Jerusalem. He called it the city of David. And for some reason, after neglecting it for 20 years, David brings the ark out of storage and directs a parade to bring it into his capital city. Now, the critics make some rather snarky comments about this. One of them said this was a political move, a ploy, a PR ploy. He hasn't needed that box with the Ten Commandments inside it for the last 20 years. Why should he need it now? Given the spoils of war, the slaughter of enemies, the taking of an awful lot of extra wives and concubines, it's obvious he's not been paying attention to the Ten Commandments. So some of the scholars, Walter Brueggemann against them, among them, say that David was trying to prove now he's bona fide. He's finally the legitimate king. He has God with him in this box. And we can understand that criticism. Every king wants God on his side because it will justify the royal decisions. And more than that, you want God in your pocket if you're the king to justify the royal authority and buttress up the royal power. And we could almost believe that's the plot afoot, except that there's a bump in the road. Quite literally, a bump. The ox cart stumbles, the Ark of the Covenant begins to slide off, and holy lightning zaps down a hapless attendant named Uzzah. A terrifying reminder that God is not in that box. That God has already given them a chapter way back in the book of Exodus about how to respect that box. And most of all, that God will not be trifled with. The parade stops. It stops for 3 months. Nobody wants to touch the box. Maybe we should put it back in storage. Let Indiana Jones take it, somebody. In fact, they probably had to go find an old copy of the scroll of Exodus to learn the proper way to handle it, this box that contained the words of God. So David's upset. His parade has stopped. He says he's angry with God. But then after a pause, the text says he's also afraid of God. He can dare to venture he's angry with God because God's not the least bit interested in being manipulated for political purposes. And when the anger passes, there comes a proper reverence. What the Bible calls the fear of the Lord. Not a phobia kind of fear. Not a cowering kind of fear, but a joyful kind of fear. Like a great, big, wow! And with that, the parade starts again. What a remarkable, noisy procession it is. 30,000 people singing and shouting. They're all moving and grooving to the same song at the same time. The musicians cut loose. If you're going to have a celebration, you need some musicians. They did. There were trumpets and lyres and harps and tambourines, castanets and cymbals. Any good parade needs a lot of cymbals. And with all this joyful noise, David starts to dance. He has to dance. He bounces, he boogies, he claps his hands, he stomps his feet, he gyrates his hips. Once he worked up a little perspiration, he pulled off his tunic, tossed it into the air to cheers, and kept dancing. And the more he danced, the warmer he became. So the warmer he became, the more he pulled off, and he kept dancing. Pretty soon, he's dancing in the same suit he was born in. And he didn't care. His wife cared. The first of his many, many, many wives. Maybe she didn't care much about him anymore, but she cared about the family's reputation. This is the king of Israel, like her daddy had been, like her brother wanted to be. And here he is, moving and grooving to the castanets, naked and dancing the funky chicken without hesitation or restriction. She groused about it. This is no way for a king to behave. And he ignores her because there is something more important than anything else. And that's the experience of being totally alive. That's what we have here. A snapshot of a man who is thoroughly joyful and completely alive. And like I said, it is the best day of his life. You ever had a day like that? A day where you totally lose yourself in something enormous. Summer's the season for big concerts. That's a possible analogy, I believe. Large crowds of people gather in massive amphitheaters to listen to music they remember from 20 or more years ago. Like my friend Jeff Stockham, who was here Wednesday night to play his trumpet. He drove home in the rain to Syracuse, and two nights later on Friday, he went to hear the band Chicago. It made him smile. So happy. Him and 20,000 of his closest friends. The energy was palpable. He enjoyed it. He deeply enjoyed it. And he said, of course, as a musician, he'd rather be playing in the band than listening to a band. Isn't that so? That's where he pours himself out. That's where he loses himself. I think of a lot of people who lose all track of time when they're doing something larger than themselves. Like the lady who fixes meals for a group of homeless men. She slices up the onions, cooks up the stew, pulls homemade pies out of the oven, all for a group of folks who could never repay her. How much time do you spend down there, you might ask? She looks at you. The screen is completely blank. Says, I don't know. I forget to look at the clock because I enjoy it so much. It's what I was meant to do. That's what a good day looks like to her. People do this. They fall in love with life or one another. All restrictions gone, abandonment just thrown to the wind. They might be like my wife was yesterday, hip deep in the dirt, pulling out weeds and enjoying it. Go figure. Don't tell her that Wednesday night for her birthday, she's going to go see the Beach Boys. And she'll lose it again. There are people who do this with stamp collections or scholars over their mountains of books. They lose all track of time because they are immersed in something bigger than themselves. And then there's the couple. They went off to take dancing lessons, ballroom dancing. They were shocked every time the bell rang and the class was over. They were just caught up in it. That's what a good day could look like. Of course, there are some who just can't dance. They're unwilling to ever lose themselves in anything, much less ever get lost. And then they'll squelch the joy in others. Years ago, when I was single and speaking at a Bible conference in Virginia, I asked my daughters if they wanted to go out for ice cream one night. They squealed, ran to the minivan. By the time we got to the minivan together, or by the time I caught up with them, they had two more people in tow. Can we ask Emily and her mom to go too? Emily was a girl about the same age as one of them. Emily's mom was a young widow, a very pretty young widow. And of course, I don't know what the girls were scheming. So I said, sure, let's go. I'm buying. Off we go, all of us. It was completely innocent. We went for ice cream, bought these enormous three-scoop cones back to the conference center, got out of the car. Then one of my girls said, come on, Emily, let's go to the playground. They start to run off, and Emily's mom yells, Emily, you walk like a lady. You behave now, you hear? And it took all the air out of her little girl's tires. Later that evening, one of my girls said, what's wrong with Emily's mom? I said, what do you mean? She said, in a seven-year-old's wisdom, she didn't want her kid to have any fun. I've often wondered, when did we stop letting kids have fun? For that matter, when did we stop letting adults act like kids? If the Bible story today has any juice, it's about the experience of pure joy, the availability of delight, the possibility of ecstasy. It was there in that last phrase of our first hymn, lost in wonder, joy, and praise. Imagine this, that selection was intentional because it points to the primary aim of the Christian life, to be caught up in the moments when everything clicks, to be caught up and intoxicated by the deep truth that we are alive because God is alive. And it is okay to lose ourselves in wonder. It's okay to love so deeply that we give ourselves away. It's okay to be caught up in the thunderous work of praise. And it's more than okay because these things are real as God is real. Lost in wonder, love, and praise. I happen to believe that this is what heaven is like, not merely then, but now. And I happen to believe that Jesus, the Son of David, comes to bring heaven to earth, to unite them in such a way that the joy of heaven begins here and now, right here, and continues forever. And I also happen to believe a few things about hell. Hell is a place where uptight people fight about which dinner fork to use. Or they bicker over the proper dress code at a banquet where the main force and course is a cold steak that nobody will be able to cut. And they argue vehemently with one another over the precise time the meal is supposed to be served, and everybody keeps watching the clock. You know what? I'd rather be lost in wonder, love, and praise. Because life is full of challenges, but life is greater than the challenges. And every day is not a good day, but when the good days come, they are always a gift, and they have the power to carry us through all the other days and nights that aren't so good. As the David story moves on from here, it's going to have a lot of bumps. He will resume fighting against the Philistines. He will start battling the Ammonites and the Arameans. One day in the palace, he will spy another man's wife and decide to steal her, add her to the harem, and then pretend that God isn't watching. He will then lose a child in birth. Later, he will choose another grown-up child who rebelled and tried to kill him. His palace will always be full of all kinds of bad behavior, and it will wear him out. Yet in the thick of it all is the memory of this day, a good day. Beyond it is the hope that tomorrow could also be a good day. And beyond that is the truth that God rules over the whole mess, that tragedy may be real, but it will not have the last word on us. That pain and difficulty will come to each one of us, but God invites us through it all and beyond the pain and difficulty. And death will come to each of us too, but life continues, and it continues abundantly for those with their hearts open to embrace it. Which is to say, there's something so much more than the brokenness we all know so well. It's the joy. Joy as if from the other side, beckoning us forward and setting us free. So dance, David, dance. Even if your wife complains and the winds blow against you. Even if the guy driving the ox cart makes a terrible mistake, keep dancing. Push the rhythm of that tambourine, stomp your feet, raise your hands, lose yourself in something far greater than yourself. Lose it in wonder. Lose it in love. Lose it in praise. Lose yourself in God, for then you will not be lost, but found.